From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We're back with another episode of PDGA Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, how's your week going so far? Did you have fun watching some Memorial this weekend?
I did. I watched all of the live coverage. I really like live coverage. I understand.
I think you deserve an award of some type.
I didn't listen to all the live coverage, but I watched all the live coverage.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that.
Pick up what I'm throwing down.
We'll talk about all of the media stuff from the Pro Tour, but we're not going to lead with that today because obviously I think the whole internet has led with that for the entire weekend. And quite honestly, I think we should start off with the action from the Memorial where we saw two really amazing performances, honestly. Eagle McMahon on the MPO side playing just historic level round ratings of golf.
Yeah.
And then on the FPO side, Evelina Salonen taking down her first stateside victory, her first Pro Tour victory. Huge performance by her. So I think we should start on that side, Sarah. What did you see this weekend out of this Finnish teenager who is a stud?
She played the Fountain Hills course very solidly. She shot 969, 961. And she just put herself in a really good place, but it's really when she moved over to Vista del Camino that she just got into her groove and was absolutely killing it. And she ended up shooting 980, which is like extremely respectable on the women's side. And then she finished it out with a 1015. And she was just absolutely unstoppable. She went, let's see, am I looking at the final round? Yeah. Final round, she took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 birdies and ended up shooting 8 under par. The next best round after that was Paige Pierce with 5 under par. She took 1 bogey. I believe she went, did she go out of bounds? No, it looks like she just missed she didn't scramble very well, but I was just so impressed with her. She just kept super level-headed. There was obviously a huge battle going on with she and Paige Pierce. Paige had her by several strokes going into the end of round 3.
Oh, man. Yeah, we got to talk about
that. Oh, my God. And then Paige just totally threw it away on hole 18. They call it the dragon hole. And you're teeing off, if you didn't watch the coverage yet, you're teeing off and you're throwing. You can either do the very aggressive play and throw over water, what is it, 400 feet? 401 feet.
I think it's like, 401, yeah.
Yeah, so there's water. You're throwing over the water. It's all down the right side.
It's a pretty thin strip.
Yeah.
There's OB on the left as well, right?
So there's OB, like a trail, walkway. I can't think of words right now. Sidewalk.
Path.
That's the word.
Sidewalk.
Going down the left-hand side. But the nice thing about it is there's one of those little Disc Golf Pro Tour like banners. Yeah, like a, I don't know, would you say it's 6 or 8 inches tall going down the left side before you get to the OB. So some players were kind of playing like a wide hyzer and hoping it kind of skipped off of the green and then hit that banner and stayed safe. But some put it way too high and kind of spiked hyzer and went straight out of bounds. Going into that hole, she was leading. And
Paige was up by like what, 3?
Yeah, 3 or 4. And she took a 7
it was
on that
rough.
Hole. She went out of bounds twice. And the rule on that hole is you throw it until
you re-tee, right?
Is
that the rule or did she choose to?
No, I think that's the rule. I think you re-tee until you get it in bounds. In my opinion, there probably should be a drop zone so you don't see these big numbers. But
she could have clubbed down on the second shot, though. She went aggressive on the first two shots.
Yeah, but that's
and
kind
so
of...
I think there's that's a kind of decision making sort of thing there.
Right. But we've seen this from Paige Pierce before. We know she's a super aggressive player. She's really confident. She knows she can reach that pin. It's for her. It's a mere 400 feet. And and she's obviously practiced that shot and knows that she could get on the green, but I don't know. I don't know what was going through her head on the second shot. We know she has a ton of confidence and probably thought like, okay, well maybe the first one was just a fluke and I'll get it there the second time.
She just kind of yanked it, right? Yeah. She kind of yanked it on the first one. And then the second one, she yanked it again. And then the third one, she put it there. And then I think the most heartbreaking thing about all that was that final round, she steps up and just freaking parks it on the first shot.
She
and it was just
to redeem herself.
Well, she did, but it was like, it was this huge juxtaposition of like, like at that point, the tournament was out of reach for her. Yeah. And like, you could see what having that, you know, freedom of mind, if you will, to not be worrying about the scores and the victory and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, that's what
it was just pure. It was just pure skill taking over there. And like, I wonder, I truly think that we would be talking about a different tournament and a different winner if Paige does that in round three, because she was in control that whole round. And then it was a huge shift. And then, I mean, she put up a pretty good battle against Evelina in the first half of the final round. She was making some really big putts.
Yeah.
Kind of going toe to toe. You would think she was going to get some momentum going her way. And I thought, you know, if she's defending that lead going into the final round, I think it's a different story. But at the same time, then that's even more credit to me, to Evelina, to be able to hold off Paige Pierce hitting big putts early, not get rattled. I mean, she just played super consistent, and really it was a big change. And I know Vegas was a different situation. She wasn't in the lead in the final round of Vegas, and she wasn't really in striking. I mean, she was kind of in striking distance, but not hugely. But final round in Vegas kind of went off the rails for her. She had a lot of OBs down the stretch, and she was just like visibly emotional. I could see her a couple times. You know, like she looked like she was in tears the final round. I don't know if she actually was, but she just, that's how she looked.
Yeah.
Her final round at Vegas, I'm pulling it up right now. She dropped four spots. She finished double bogey, bogey, bogey.
Yeah.
Like just a really, really rough finish for her. You know, she was in second place going into the final round, and she ended up in sixth. And so just to see her correct course from one week to the next, I think was huge. I think this tournament really set up well for her skills. Not quite as long, demanding holes. She has plenty of power off the tee, but really, I think I just saw a lot of precision out of her.
Yeah,
and being able to control her distance, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, she has a ton of power. Her form kind of reminds me of James Conrad. She doesn't do like such a long run up. James Conrad
very loud. There is a lot of snap. Like it's very loud when she throws.
Conrad needs about 30 feet of a run up. She may only need about 10 or 15. But
James Conrad just running up from outside the circle.
Yeah.
on the previous hole.
She gets so much power though. And I don't remember who it was. Someone was like, man, she really looks like she's out of control while she's throwing. And she really doesn't look like that to me. Like she's off balance. Or she just gets a ton of power and puts her whole body into it. But I'm just looking at her stats. She was first in OB. So I took the least amount of
OB. That would be the lowest OB, right?
Yeah. Yep. Second in fairway hits, fifth in park, second in circle one, second in circle two, both in regulation, and second in birdies. I mean, like you said,
not as good on the putting as I would have expected, but her final round putting, but her final round, she went, okay, first round 57, second round 40. And this is all circle one X that they call it now. Third round 60 and final round 90%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she turned it on the putting green when she had to. She only two putted once. And I think really, again, it kind of came into where she was just putting them plenty close, but she, you know, I mean, her longest putt was to open the final round. Oh no, I'm sorry. She had a 27 footer on hole 17 as well. So what she's, I think she's 19, right? Does that sound correct?
I think so.
I'm going to say she's 19.
Yeah.
I'm going to double check that because I can never, there's too many young people and I can't keep track of all their birthdays.
I'm just most impressed with her mental fortitude. Like I can't imagine how she was feeling just coming to the US, but if I were in her shoes, just all of the pomp and circumstance that's been around her, like we've talked about her a ton last year, other outlets have talked about her a ton. She's one of the highest.
I mean, she's a big
in the world.
Yeah. And she's big on the Innova team. They've been putting a lot of focus on her now.
Yep. And just having that sort of being so young, coming over to a country that you're not familiar with, playing with tons of new people and just having all that pressure on you, I'm just really, really impressed that she was able to bring home the win.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's 19.
Okay.
I wonder if actually playing in Finland, where the crowds are generally more significant.
Yeah.
I wonder if that actually maybe gives her kind of an advantage when she comes here. Like, it's not Possibly. A huge, I mean, there was a decent gallery, but in the not huge for the morning rounds. So I wonder if that point. Maybe she's able to come over and take a little of the pressure off. I don't know, but
yeah.
Either way, I think, you know, we've been talking about her for a while, her and like Hannah Blomroos, and I've seen some chatter on the interwebs that maybe they're coming over for Worlds. I really hope they both do.
Awesome.
I mean, this was Evelina's 36th career victory. That's nuts.
Yeah. And what, she's been playing for how long?
Hold on, just time out. I'm going to do math real fast. And by me, I mean the calculator. So she's played 56 career events and won 36 of them. Her winning percentage, she wins 64% of the tournaments she plays.
Yeah.
And again, that's obviously, you know, it's the field isn't quite as deep, I'm sure, over in Finland and everything like that. But it's still a pretty strong, you know, scene over there, obviously. Like, to be winning 64% of the events you play is pretty insane.
So her first year as a PDGA member was 2014. And in that 1 year, she played junior two girls. She was eligible to play junior two girls, advanced women, and open. And she played 8 open events and won most of them, 5 of them. the same year that she's playing.
And what year was that?
2014.
So she would have been 14?
Yeah. And this isn't like, I'm looking at her first places, and she wasn't just winning by default. She had
there was competition. I mean, look, she's 952 rated at the moment. That was actually down 4 points from her last rating. I'm sure that's going to go up. And the other thing we got to talk about, Sarah, is her 10-15 in the final round, that will probably go up when the ratings are official, because that was after the cut.
Yep.
And generally, ratings drop after the cut and then are kind of adjusted back to your normal full field size. I'm guessing, and I think Chuck Kennedy was on an email, our ratings guru, and he was saying that'd probably be up toward like 10:25, 10:30 when it's
so
official.
Cool. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I picked her to win Vegas, and I guess I was just a week off. I had to wait.
She just needed to warm up.
Yeah, I'm so proud of her though. That's amazing.
That, by the way, the 10-15, even unofficial, is her highest round ever by 1 point.
What?
She shot a 10-14 in 2017.
Dang. Life goals. So, can I?
I think
go back
we need
time?
To. I think life goals for us. life goals for us needs to be to learn Finnish so we can have her on the show.
I really want to. It's not. It can't be that hard. I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
You're just being overconfident, Sarah.
I have no.
I know. I only know how to say like thank you. That's about it.
I don't even know that. What is that?
It's like kitos or something like that, and I'm probably saying it wrong. K-I-I-T-O-S is how you spell it.
Sounds right.
Anyway, congrats to Evelina, and then let's take some other looks on the FPO side before we move to the MPO side. Paige Pierce, I was pleased to see her rebound. I did not think we were going to see 2 weeks in a row of seventh place from her. It did start out a little dicey, and then she turned it on the second round. You know, I think for anyone who wanted to talk about Paige and, you know, what was going on with her after Vegas, I think it's just the whole thing of she needs to be in the tournament swing of things and into the competitive mode a little more before playing the first big event. And the other part about this is, look, the women's field is getting better. Like, it's not just going to be Paige Pierce running away with it every week. And even she said that, and other players who I talked to in Vegas, asking them for like bold predictions in 2019, a lot of them said that both on the men's and the women's side, they didn't think it was just going to be one or two players dominating. They thought there were going to be more people in the mix. And you've got two people the first 2 weeks on the women's side who are not Paige Pierce or Katrina Allen, who's generally been the other like standard bearer on the women's side.
Yeah.
I think that's super exciting. You know, Rebecca Cox, top five finish.
Yeah.
Katrina Allen, I did like seeing her bump back up a little bit. Callie McMorrin, another top 10 for her, two top 10s in a row. Like,
Jessica, you know, Weiss just keeping it so solid. She's
Jessica Weiss is playing real well.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, she was on the coverage a bit. What did you kind of take in from her? Is it just, she's just really able to dial in her accuracy, it seems like, yeah, a lot, right?
We've talked about this a ton, but the fact that she's, her backhand just keeps getting better and better.
Like, her backhand is severely underrated. Like,
oh yeah.
She can crush.
And I know I've said this, I feel like I've said this a million times during episodes last year, but when I'm not a forehand player, but I can only imagine if forehand dominant players are trying to throw backhand, they're primarily just going to throw backhand for the hyzer, which is like the easiest shot to do backhand. But she's not sure. Just doing the hyzer. She's doing like flex shots and turnover shots and like the whole gambit. So I've said this a million times, I'm really impressed with her range of throwing. And then,
yeah.
Oh, so starting out, there was a six-way tie for first, and I know I'm not going to remember everyone. Oh, I guess I could sort it.
After round one,
there's a six-way tie. It was Evelina, Jessica Weiss, right, Jennifer Allen, Missy Gannon, Zoe Andyke, and Maria Oliva. And I was really excited about that because there's a few women on here I've played with several times that I love to play with, and I haven't seen them on coverage that much. Maria, yeah, was really fun to watch her. Missy Gannon, she stayed up there. She had a really good second round.
Right, and was she on lead card third round?
She was on
lead. Or was that second round?
She was on lead card, I want to say second round, but they were doing a good job of kind of jumping back and forth between lead card and chase card whenever there were backups. So we got to see her several rounds because she was on the chase card for a couple of rounds too. So that was really cool watching her. I got to play with her at Worlds last year for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm kind of disappointed. I picked Jennifer Allen for my top five. She finished eighth. I was hoping. I think
she was sick.
Was she? Okay.
I read on social media that she was battling something. And I remember like a couple days before the event, she posted something that her kids were sick. So that doesn't surprise me.
Dang. That's
yeah. Great. She posted that I think like her caddy was like basically keeping her hydrated and she was ready. Aww. She was almost ready to walk off the course. Like it was the worst she'd ever felt.
That sucks too, being on your home courses and wanting to smash.
Right. And that's really what she said was so disappointing. Like she should play really well there. So I think we can probably chalk some of that up to health.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I just love seeing, like you said, I love seeing all the new names popping up and not just being the Paige and Katrina show.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, we love Paige and Katrina.
Yeah.
But we also love Rebecca Cox and, you know, Paige Bierkes. Now, are you surprised to see Paige Bierkes slip down the leaderboard a little bit this week? She came in seventh.
A little bit, yes. But she posted about, you know, disc golf being kind of a roller coaster, and one week you do really well and the courses suit you and everything's come together, and the next week you don't. And that doesn't mean that you're a bad player or whatever. It's just kind of life. So I was really happy to see that post from her, that she was just kind of taking it in stride and being really mature about it and not making excuses. Like there's so many disc golfers and just people in general out there, I'll get in my soapbox for a second, that don't ever want to take responsibility or just take ownership of like playing poorly. It's like, all right, you had a bad round. Just, you don't have to blame it on other people or blame it on the wind or your discs or anything else. Just be like, yeah, I'm a human. I had a bad round.
I wasn't good today. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's totally fine. Like we're in a sport where it's so, everything has to come together for you to play well. And there's so many different variables that could take you down on any given day. So I was very happy to see a very mature response to her finish at the event.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think there's something to be said for coming off of those big wins is very difficult when you are a young player who is still racking up a couple of those big wins. And it's like, I didn't expect to see I didn't expect to see her and Calvin do super, super well this week. I thought that we were going to see a little bit of a slide from either of them, and it didn't surprise me. Calvin Heimberg over on the MPO side came in. I got to double check. Came in tied for 17th. So, I mean, I neither of those results terribly surprised me. What I do want to see now is, okay, do they get into a full funk, or do they come back with some solid showings at Waco and Jonesboro and GBO? I think that's really what's going to make the difference. With Paige Bierkus last year, she kind of went into a full rest of the season. I don't want to say downward spiral, but she'll even tell you, like, she I believe she said she chundered, quote unquote, at the end of last season, as if she were Australian. And
I like that word.
And so,
yeah,
it's a good one. It's a good one. And so, I mean, really, I think what we're going to look for is, does she consistently put herself in the mix at the, in the top five? And look, she didn't miss the cut or anything at this event. She still came in seventh place. That's a top 10 finish. Nothing to scoff at.
We just started the season, so I don't know. Maybe last year after Worlds, it was just a fatigue thing.
She hadn't toured the whole year, but I think it's just like Worlds emotion is, God, come on. Like,
yeah.
It's got to be. I know. It's insane.
Yeah. It's a long season. I think she's going to be in the mix again.
Absolutely. Yeah. It'll just be interesting to see which courses that's at. We know which courses kind of suit her.
Yeah.
I think we'll see her in the mix more. I don't necessarily even expect to see her do as well at Waco, just because there's a bit more woods.
Mm-hmm.
I think like a Jonesboro, GBO, obviously home turf.
Yeah.
I think we'll see her do well at. Let's switch over to the MPO side, where Eagle McMahon came away with, basically just walked away with it. Like,
yeah,
at the end, he won by 4 strokes, but it was kind of over early. I believe Nate Doss on the commentary was talking about it at like hole 11 and how it was over. And look, I think Eagle is just, I think Eagle is playing at an insane level, because the stats show you that he's playing at an insane level. His last five rounds, including his final round at Vegas, where he shot 15 under, all the way through the Memorial when he won, he averaged 1079 rated golf.
That's unreal.
And that final, and that included a 1035 in the final round. Like, he shot an 1100 at a 1091 in this tournament.
Yeah.
That's mind boggling. And look, the Memorial generally yields high ratings. We saw him and Simon both break 1100 in round one. This is the course where Paul McBeth has set the all-time ratings record of 1132. So not terribly surprising, but those dudes were just, they were playing on a whole different level. And like Fountain, they pretty much just need to throw controlled hyzers. I did like seeing, I actually, this may be kind of a hot take, but like, I'm not a huge Fountain Hills fan. I much prefer when the tournament moves over to Vista del Camino. Maybe it's dead and brown and stuff. So is Vegas. But you get a little more variety of shots. You're seeing some more rollers. You're not just seeing huge hyzers. And I really think that probably is kind of why Eagle was able to separate. There was a little more shot variety there. Not saying that Simon Lazat, who was in first earlier, doesn't have that variety of shots. But, you know, Eagle is just, I personally, let me ask you this question, Sarah. I know my answer to it. Do you think that Eagle is the best disc golfer right now?
I hate superlatives. We've talked about this.
Come on. Have fun. You're in. This is part of your job as disc golf media personality to do superlatives.
Oh my gosh.
You don't have to say yes. I just want to know what you think.
But I don't want to say no. It's not, to me, it's just a gray area. I think,
ooh.
I know, I'm so wishy-washy on every subject. I know, I apologize. But it just depends on the course. It depends on the course and the player's mindset and so many different variables. Like, I could be the best at this course and I win the event by 10 strokes, but then the next event, I don't.
But I'm saying, like, body of work from from like the end of last year and last year to now. Do you think Eagle is the best player, or do you think that he's just the best player at these courses and other people who maybe are considered the best players are just like adapting to new stuff?
I want to say if I were to pick the top two best players, it would be Eagle and Macbeth still. But okay. I'm kind of waiting to see his full transition to his new arsenal.
Yeah, we need to see a little more out of Paul. Like, every putt seems to be coming out low, and then he's adjusting, and it goes high. And the good thing is he's not really missing left or right, so hopefully he can just figure out the touch there. And honestly, I will agree with you. Superlatives are difficult sometimes. I think right now Eagle is the best, but is it because he's, you know, I think with Eagle right now, his mental game has elevated to a point that a lot of these guys are having a hard time touching. Yeah. And like Simon, for example, I love Simon, but you could see that when the going got tough, he started to struggle a little bit with keeping it together mentally. And you don't really see Eagle do that occasionally. Last year at Worlds, he did it because I think he put the whole world on his shoulders and thought he had to win that event the way his season has gone.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen him do any of that kind of like
thrown
outward
away.
Emotional stuff. He's become so even keeled.
Yeah.
That it's a huge benefit to him. And you combine that with the fact that he's not changing over bags like Paul Macbeth or Ricky Wysocki or Paul Ulibarri or Kevin Jones or some of these guys who have all the skill in the world but are in transition mode. And I think he's just able to just be super comfortable on the course.
Yeah, he's definitely zen. And I think there was a couple times that, Simon was playing super well and then he made a mistake and was just like, the next hole just got up on the tee and just threw really fast because he was upset. Like, that's the sort of stuff that you cannot do. Like, you... And we've talked about that.
And I think, again, I think Simon was putting a lot of pressure on himself going into this event. He really wanted to win this. He was the defending champ.
Yeah.
He had this one circled on his calendar. He even said after the first round that, like, he this was a big one for him. And so, again, I think there was that level of pressure there.
Yeah.
And that's hard to really quantify. Like, it's hard to say how much that helps Eagle play without that weight on him if he, you know, isn't the defending champion. I don't know.
It's just so difficult. I think if I had a ridiculously good round one and still had three rounds to play, that's the sort of stuff I would never, you try to push that out of your mind. Like, okay, I've got this one in the bag because I had a really good round. I'm feeling really good. Like that.
Oh no, I don't think, I mean, Simon never said any of that. Obviously he even knew it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the sort of stuff that kills you mentally. And the opposite is like, oh, I'm not the highest rated player here. I'm not going to play well like that. I have done that before. And that just kills you mentally. It's not productive at all. And I think that's where Eagle has really hit his stride, is just like being so zen and not letting anything external affect him. And then just taking like not taking any shots for granted, just like being in the moment, not trying to win an event, but trying to throw the best shot possible every
he's just
time.
Trying to win a shot, right? Exactly. Yeah,
that's so important to do.
Yeah, it's been really like kind of fun to watch, and almost there's almost like a mechanical type attitude to Eagle right now, and it's kind of wild because it's just a little scary, I think, for everyone else. Let's talk about Yale Storr. What a great performance from him. Third place.
His
third round he shot 1091? I think it was the third round. Highest round rated ever by a Finnish player. So great weekend for Finland.
Yeah.
Between him and Evelina. And, you know, hit some really solid putts. Was it final round or third round? That's the problem with having the same course two rounds in a row sometimes for me. I think it was hole five, one of the elevated baskets. He was kind of on the right side, pinched behind a tree, and he got down to a knee for like a 40 footer and it was a great putt.
Yeah.
Just really strong shots like that. And the nice thing about him is he wasn't just pumping these huge hyzers the whole time. Like, he was taking the up the gut shots or the more, you know, the less power, more finesse type shots. And he was able to play just as well. I mean, he was six shots off the pace, but you know, final round, round three was 13 under. Final round, he actually matched Eagle the last two rounds, 13 under and 8 under.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it really showed that you don't have to just, it doesn't have to just be Heiser Fest, you know, when you're out there.
Yeah.
You can go and you can attack those courses, or at least Vista, you can attack it with a different type of style.
Yep. He just kept it so clean. He didn't. Actually, he did. Oh, no. He had one out of bounds penalty stroke. Nope. He had two.
Yeah, he had one on. Okay.
His hole 18. That's right. He went out of bounds. Hole 18 is final round. Yeah, he went eight straight birdies through the first eight holes, round three at Vista. And he's just racking them up. Went bogey free rounds one, three, and four. So that was really cool. I'm always excited to see.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, like I've heard his name for years, mostly trying to pronounce it correctly. And now that I know how to pronounce it correctly, it was just cool to see him on camera. Like I got giddy. I was like, oh, I get to watch a new person, and not just one round, but he was on coverage two or three rounds.
Yeah. You got to see Scott Withers. Got to see Scott Withers a bit in the final round as well. I didn't get to watch a whole terrible amount of the final round. It was my daughter's birthday over the weekend. But, you know, it looked a little bit like Scott Withers was a little bit rattled by some of the spotlight, which is kind of a bummer because he's a really good player, like Pacific Northwest guy, really highly rated. Let me pull up his rating because I don't remember it off the top of my head. But he's always one of those guys who, he's 1027. He's usually in that 1025 to 1030 range. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't tour as much.
Yeah.
But you know, he played really well at Beaver State last year. It looks like he's hitting up Masters Cup this year. He's a really solid contender. And you know, he came in 10th place at Vegas. It's not like this was some out of the blue performance from him. So I was happy to see him get a little love on the coverage. I was just bummed. You could tell there were a couple moments. I think at one point he was asking for someone to like turn their camera sound off.
Yeah, I heard that.
I don't remember. I don't know who it was, but there were definitely like a little bit of lead card jitters, which is understandable. Yeah. You know, it's hard. It's a whole different animal.
Yep. I was happy to see Johnny McRae made it into the top 10. He finished in sixth. Yep. And
look, Paul and Ricky both jumped up to fourth in the final round. Like they're going to be fine. Everyone who wants to Ricky Wysocki shot 13 under the final round, Paul McBeth 11 under, bogey free for both of them. You know, McBeth and McBeth still missed two putts. He could have easily been 13 under. You know, I think it maybe is going to be a couple weeks, but we're going to get back to Ricky and Paul battle mode pretty soon.
Yeah, I think so too.
So, any other big performances or highlights you want to look at before we move to the hot rounds?
I want to give a shout out to my friend Brian Earhart. He finished in eighth. Yeah, I've known him. I met him when we were both playing collegiate disc golf back in the
day. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So he finished eighth, and he had a really good showing at Vegas as well.
He did.
I'm trying to pull it up real fast. Earhart.
I got to meet him for the first time at Vegas. Couldn't be nice. He ended up 45th at Vegas, but he started out hot.
He did. He's a cool dude.
But you know, coming, he'd been injured the last couple years and is coming back and is healthy, and he's a lefty. So give me some more lefties.
Yeah, he is.
I like seeing some more lefties out there. Just genuinely nice dude.
Yeah.
So happy to see him have some success. I'm hoping that we get to see him out on the road a little more. I think that would be cool. And it looks like we're going to, looking at his schedule. Oh, sweet. He's coming out to an event near me. I should go check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a full slate going. He's hitting up almost all the pro tours and NTs.
Awesome.
So I bet we'll get to see him at some other tournaments.
We're planning on doing some music collaboration together. Cause he also sings on the guitar. So.
Oh, fancy. We'll
have to, maybe a Jonesboro.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's go to hot rounds. and see what really were the hottest rounds. I know we've mentioned a couple of them already, but Sarah, why don't you start us out on the FPO side, even though we've already kind of talked about
it down. Yeah. All right. The fifth hottest rated round was Jessica Weiss. And she shot a, 971, her third round at Vista del Camino. Congratulations. She's been making it on our leaderboard pretty regularly.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
Yeah, she's pretty good. The next hottest rated round was Katrina Allen. She shot a 978, and that was her last round at Vista. Oh, these are all at the Memorial, by the way.
Yeah, these are all Memorial all day this weekend. Them.
Yeah, FPO and NPO. The next hottest rated round was Rebecca Cox, actually a three-way tie. Sarah Hokum, Rebecca Cox, Madison Walker, and Evelina also shot a 980 rated round, and that was during their third round at Vista. Congratulations. The second hottest rated round was Paige Pierce. She shot 1,000 on the dot, but that will probably, what was that? That was her second round. So hopefully that stays.
That'll probably stay.
Yeah, hopefully that stays at 1,000. It's always nice to have a four-digit round rating. That was at Fountain Hills. And the hottest rated round we have already talked about. Evelina Solonen shot a 915, her final round. And we're
a what?
915. 915? 1015. Add 100 to that. A 1015. It's so hot, I couldn't even verbalize it. It was just so hot.
I know, right?
She shot a 1015 at Vista del Camino, and we're hoping that goes up to a 1115.
Oh, wow. That would be insane.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, it
would. We would take that. All right. On the MPO side, again, these all come from the Memorial. And let's just process for a moment that the fifth hottest rated round is a 1082.
Woo!
That's like really big for those keeping score at home. Grady Hsu and Mr. Johnny McRae both tossed that with 48s in the third round. Johnny came in sixth and Grady Hsu tied for 17th. Those are pretty good. Sias Elmore shot a 1090 rated. I want to say that was his first round, but let me double check. No, that was his second round. He shot 1071 the first round, 1090 the second round. Man, he owned it over at Fountain, struggled a bit over at Vista, but he came in 14th place. Nice to see him get some love on the coverage.
Yeah, that was cool.
Sias, it's nice to see another, again, like just getting someone who's kind of throwing those more like straight line shots instead of the big over the top hyzers.
Yeah.
Yale Storr and Eagle McMahon both shot 1091 rated third rounds. We know Yale came in third and Eagle came in first. And let's see here. Second hottest rated round. That would have also gone to Eagle McMahon with his 1101 opener, which left Simon Lazat with an 1110 rated opening round over at Fountain Hills, the hottest round of the weekend.
So silly.
Very nicely done.
It's crazy.
So silly.
So silly.
Very silly. All right. So one thing we didn't really talk about was, and I guess we can kind of get to it in the media part of the discussion, but there's a situation where a player, their disc hit a cameraman. Robert Leonard's going to talk about that in our rules break, and then we'll be back with some more chatter on the DGPT media situation right here in just a moment on PDGA Radio.
Hi, this is Robert Leonard, a PDGA Marshal, and this is the PDGA Radio rules break. This week, we're looking at a situation that occurred at the Memorial Championship presented by Discraft. It was the final round, and Jessica Weiss was throwing her upshot on hole 6. The upshot goes out over and out of bounds area, appears to be coming back in bounds, hits a cameraman, and then stays out of bounds. There's no doubt that this is an extremely unfortunate situation, and to be honest, one of the really rare bad things that comes when something like our sport grows. There's no doubt that the media person made an error in the situation, and I have zero doubt that that media person feels terrible. The question, however, from a rule standpoint, is what happens when something like this happens? What do you do if you hit someone on staff or in the media, or a much more likely scenario for the 99% of us that won't ever play a competitive round filmed, hit another park user and go out of bounds? Well, the rules are pretty straightforward in this situation. 810C actually talks about this, and it's pretty straightforward. A thrown disc that strikes a person or an animal is played where it first comes to rest. pretty straightforward here. This disc that Jessica threw came to rest in an out-of-bounds area, and it's played out of bounds. Standard out-of-bounds rules apply here in this situation. It is worth noting at this point that 810D does say that a thrown disc whose course was intentionally altered is given at the position of the point of the contact as agreed by the group, and the thrower can then choose to play that lie or to abandon that throw without penalty, essentially a free rethrow. There's clearly not intent here, so that situation does not apply in this. However, I wanted to note that because this does cover the crazy situation of a park user catching a disc intentionally or a dog who thinks that you're playing catch. I mean, I've personally had a dog pick up one of my discs and play. So basically, if you're ever in this situation where you think someone's going to get hit, what do you do? Well, 803.01b does say that a player may request that other people move themselves or their belongings. So if something's in your way, you have by rule the right to say, hey, please move that. If you think there's any remote chance of hitting somebody, their bag, simply ask them to move or even wait for them. Remember, especially at public courses, other park users have as much right to be on that property as we do. In the end, the extra shot really didn't cost Jessica anything besides a headache. Even if she had come back in bounds and then made her putt, she still finishes one behind Paige Pierce for second. But in a game where every single throw matters, taking a few extra seconds to wait for a park user, or even a cameraman on staff, can save you quite a bit of headaches and shots. Once again, this is Robert Leonard, reminding you as always, rules are your friend.
All right. So, Sarah, it was the memorial that created 1,000 memes.
yeah.
As, you know, the Disc Golf Pro Tour launched a very ambitious media plan after a very contentious offseason with all the media stuff. And it wasn't all good. It wasn't all bad. The internet got very fired up about a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think we should talk about it, give some feedback, figure out, you know, what's this mean for the Pro Tour going forward? Because that's really, at this point, the media stuff almost, like, depending on what you really follow from the event, the media stuff was a large storyline over the weekend.
Yes.
Maybe not if you're on the ground playing the tournament, but definitely if you're at home watching and following, and that's where a lot of disc golf lives right now. So, I do want to say this before we go into this conversation. Like, I will say, progressively throughout the weekend, the media did improve. It started out not good. It ended up getting better throughout the week. So I will say that there has been progressive improvement. I hope to see more progressive improvement. But Sarah, what? Let's break it down into live and post. I think I probably watched more posts than you did. It sounds like you watched a lot of live.
I don't
so.
Think I've watched any posts because I was totally...
Well, cool. Then I'll take the post section. You take the live section.
I was burnt out from watching all the live coverage.
No, I get it, right? If you're going to watch... And that's why there's both of them.
Yeah.
What kind of impression did you get from the live coverage? Obviously, day one, like, the women's coverage halfway froze and...
Yeah.
Part of that was allegedly due to a YouTube outage, but okay. They also were having problems, like they didn't have enough batteries.
Yeah. So just overall, I think there's a little bit of under preparation. I know that Johnny V, shout out, love that guy. He was doing the
Smashbox
game.
Yeah, sorry,
yes. Jonathan Van Der Zen, and he was doing the switchboard and you know, he's really active on social media and was, he's just so professional. He's, you know, when people are giving backlash and maybe critiquing a little bit harshly, he never is on the defense. He's just like, yeah, like, these are the facts. This is why it happened this way. You know, the cameraman had some issues in the first few rounds and I'm working with them and they're getting better. And this is just growing pains kind of stuff. So I really appreciated his respectful commentary on kind of what was going on behind the scenes. So that was cool. I guess my first impression was, you know, Nate and Val, we know that they were at home and They had
you could tell they were home because they had to make their bed behind them. Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm going to assume that it was a, you know, like a 2000 thread count Egyptian cotton sheet. I'm not sure.
They needed a steamer.
I'm not sure if it was slept on already. I don't know. It's so, but I don't really blame them for that. It's more of
that's not their responsibility.
Yeah. Like these are tiny details. So I'm in marketing. I do event planning. I'm a TD. And there's so many little details that go into events like this. And it just seemed like some of those fine details were looked over. And that may not, it may not be something that you're like, oh, we need a backdrop. Like it may be, you may just think of that as a TD as like an afterthought because it doesn't directly affect the course or the players or whatever. But when you've got a couple thousand people watching it and maybe people who have never watched disc golf before and that's their first impression, it doesn't look good.
Well, look, and I think what that told me was that clearly Nate and Val, like getting them to do commentary must not have come together. It may have been kind of an 11th hour thing.
Yeah.
We didn't get the announcement on who the commentary teams were until last week. And then they didn't have enough lead time, it seems like, to get them the backdrop and their shirts, which from what I saw, the Pro Tour was commenting that they got stuck in a storm or whatever. But again, like, if you've known since November or whatever that you were going to do this live coverage this way, it seems to me that it just seemed that was kind of an 11th hour move. That's one of those things I'm with you. Like the general, like lack of attention to detail and lack of preparation on some of this stuff is kind of what stood out and really just what disappointed me the most.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to like slag on the Pro Tour. We're not doing live coverage at the National Tour. So
it's a different animal.
It's a different animal. I will give them. Well, and our courses don't allow for it a lot of times. But at the same time, like if you know you're going to be doing live coverage and that's what you're building the backbone of your tournament and your media strategy on, and you had months to figure this out, that backdrop should have been to your people last month.
Not
during round three. And I'm sorry, like that kind of stuff, it, you know. I will appreciate that Nate and Val like steered into the skid and they took it down the second round. And then I think they even joked about it when they got the Pro Tour backdrop.
They were like, oh, this is our comforter taken right off of our bed. So I thought that was pretty funny that they were comical about
it. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, and then it also seemed like Nate and Val were a little bit unprepared. It didn't seem like they were too attuned to the U-Disc app and all of its functionality, because I remember during like round two or three Val said something like, oh, Nate just showed me that you can favorite players, and it's like, yeah, that was like a function they released last year. I don't know. So, and then just not so knowing some of the players' names that were on the leader chase card, I totally understand them not knowing like what disc everyone is throwing, like that's difficult to do, but it just also lends to what you said, that maybe this was an 11th hour decision and they didn't have time to do the research that maybe they should have done. And I feel like just like marketing or social media, everyone, it's one of those things that everyone thinks that they can do. Like, oh, I play disc golf, therefore I can commentate on it. It is a fine art.
It is not easy at all.
Talking from experience, when I started this podcast 1 year ago, I was like a ball of nerves. And not saying that I'm a pro at it. I'm maybe like an intermediate at this point. I'm like maybe 800 rated at podcasting.
There we go.
Hey, at least I'm not an 800 rated disc golfer.
That's I got that part covered.
Yeah. But I'm just saying it's an art. Like, and I think it's one of those things that people take for granted. It's like, oh, I play disc golf and I've played these courses before. I've been there, done that. Therefore I can talk about it. It's like, no, you need to know when to talk, what to say, what's appropriate to say, when to be enthusiastic, when to not talk at all these different things. And hopefully they learn from this experience. And you could tell that there are some awkward moments sometimes. So some of that was a little bit uncomfortable. Again, growing pains.
I will say this. On your point about appropriate, inappropriate things to say, I'm going to sound like total prude saying this, and I will admit that right now, but like making a mistake of mixing up Simon and Eagle into a drinking game where you're like, haha, drink. That to me does not come off as professional at all. Yeah. And I really, really wish they wouldn't have done that. I think, and you know, the kind of comparison I make is like, okay, sure. People could say, oh, but you know, a beer sponsor could sponsor the tour and da da da. And look, the Pro Tour has had commercials from that disc gulp drinking card game or whatever thing last year. Fine. But Bud Light, Coors, all these things, they sponsor the NFL broadcasts and the commercials, but you would never hear Joe Buck and Troy Aikman make an NFL broadcast into a drinking game. And that one kind of rubbed me the wrong way. So I would hope that, I know it's funny and you're interacting with a chat and everything, but as far as trying to take this as a professional thing, moving the sport forward, I would really like to see a little more cognizance of that. On the other hand, I will say this. I've seen people chattering online that they thought Nate Doss was too negative in like calling out players making mistakes and things like that. No way, man.
That was me.
Like, well, it was also you, but there were other comments too. Look, it's sports. People mess up, and a commentator's job is to call that out in a non-sugarcoated fashion. So I have no problem with Nate saying that a player made a mistake or a miscalculation or anything, because that's the reality of sports. And I do commend Nate for that portion of his commentary. I think being real is a good
for
thing.
For sure. I'm all about being real, but I feel like there's maybe a more tactful way of delivering those messages sometimes. And they, again, commentating is a fine art. I have done post-production
but I mean, what do you want him to say when someone makes a mistake? Like, oh, bummer for him. Like, how do you want it to go?
Exactly what you just said. Like, that was a miscalculation. Like, that's a really tactful way to
it's just a synonym for mistake.
I know, but instead of being like, oh man, that was terrible, like that shot was terrible, like I don't know. I just want to.
Yeah, and I didn't hear that too much. I didn't listen to a ton of it that closely.
I guess I want a little bit more diplomacy from a commentator.
Fair enough.
And I'm not very diplomatic myself. You're more of you embody that a little bit.
Oh, that's what I have to do. It's my job.
I had something else, but I can't remember now. I'll go back to it if I remember.
All right. Well, I'll give. So here's the thing. Here's the interesting part on more of the media stuff. So they were using, they put out the post-production stuff, generally not really on time, which I kind of always thought that their release schedule was pretty ambitious anyway. And the biggest thing is that the quality right now of their post-production is not up to snuff with where it was before with Jomez and Central Coast or even Parsave and things doing it. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do moving forward. They're using, from what I understand, if you haven't seen it yet, Johnny Disc Golf, Corey Merle did an interview with Steve Dodge, I think the second day. And he said that they're using a standard like 4-person crew, but then they're getting local videographers at every event, which to me means we're going to keep seeing some of these camera work problems. And that was the biggest issue for me the whole weekend.
Yeah.
The camera work. You could tell that they were cameramen who were not familiar with disc golf. And that's something that you can't really take for granted. And I think maybe was taken for granted. I think they were hoping that they were going to pick up on it quickly and they did improve. But I mean, you had like shots being missed. The angles on putting were just like, I'm not sure what according to Johnny V, you know, having a live camera stand in place for that is important because you can't cut from shot to shot. But what they're doing is they're then using that same live coverage footage to cut the post-production.
Yeah.
And then you're getting these funky putting angles and it shows really weird depth perceptions. You can't tell how long the putts are. They're framed oddly. And then I even noticed like, it looked like they literally just pulled it straight from the live stream. I thought they were going to be recording the live stuff to the camera and then using the high quality stuff there. But I think they were just using the same stuff in the stream. The quality just wasn't there yet. And I really hope they can improve that because, I mean, I think honestly what we're saying right now is like constructive and charitable. People have not been nice to them. Like,
yeah,
it's been brutal. And I will say it's very ambitious what the Pro Tour has done. And I understand why they did it. They realized that to be a sustainable tour, they need to be able to monetize the media in the way that they feel they should be able to. And they weren't necessarily able to come to agreements with some of the post-production teams. Totally get that. But there is kind of a standard that's been set and that hasn't been lived up to yet. And I hope that they can get there. I mean, and just little things, misspelling of players' names in the scorecards. They misspelled Evelina Salonen's first and last name round. They had wrong scores on the cards. Memorial Championship was spelled without an I, so it was championship.
And, oh, no.
You know, things like that. Just little, it was an overall lack of attention to detail that I think was maybe taken for granted and that I hope to see improved. I do worry about Waco because, at least for, I don't, maybe not about for post-production, but for the live production. So Johnny V came in to do the switching pretty last minute. It was, again, this was another 11th hour thing. They had a technical director on hand. That technical director left or was fired. I don't know the exact situation, but Johnny V came in, ran the live show. He is going to be on a cruise during Waco, like with his family.
Oh.
He can't run the live show in a week and a half.
So who's gonna?
So they have a week and a half to get a new technical director and then two new cameramen. And I really worry that the quality there is going to be, it's, I have concerns. That's all. And then we haven't even talked about the MPO2 that they were supposed to put out post-production. They've delayed that because of editing workflow and stuff, which again, I understand. I got a statement from Seth Fenley at the Pro Tour, and more or less they realized that they just couldn't put out the MPO2 and they needed to focus on getting out the FPO and MPO1. They still plan to put it out sometime before Waco, and they're hoping to integrate it for next day sooner than later.
Yeah. Okay, I remembered what I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
So at the very end of the fourth round, after Eagle won, there was kind of an awkward moment where before he got the chance to add up his scorecard, he was kind of ushered over to do an interview with Sean Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's the TD of the
San Francisco Open. I think he's also, I want to say he's the Pro Tour like director of partnerships or something like that.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure what
website. He is the partnership director. Yeah.
Is that new this year?
He's been with them for a while.
Oh, okay. I knew that he was a TD, but I wasn't sure. I didn't know that he had a ongoing connection with disc golf.
Oh, yeah. I think he actually was that before San Francisco even became an event on the Pro Tour.
Okay. So the PDGA does a really good job of allowing the players to finish up the round, add up the scorecard and whatnot before they do interviews with none other than Steve Hill and other media personnel that are there. But it was kind of awkward because he just like threw out a question at him and he was like, all right, hole 11. Is that what the is that when the turning point was for you or something? And Eagle was like, what hole is that? It was just kind of awkward.
Yeah.
And then I was like, he doesn't even know that he won. I mean, he knew that he won, but he didn't. Like, the scorecard is the most important thing.
And I think, look, it's, yeah, and it's kind of different in disc golf. Like, most sports have the post-game interview. Like, NBA, NFL, whatever, you do the post-game interview right after it's done. But the score is done in those sports when the game is done. Like,
yeah,
we have to still tally the scorecard. So that's the biggest thing. And honestly, I think a lot of that came after a few years ago, what, 4 or 5 years ago at the Memorial, when Will Schustrick was doing his post-round interview and then someone was like, oh, you did your score wrong. And then they went to a playoff. So ever since then, there's been a real focus on making sure that everyone gets their scorecards tallied up. And honestly, I think they should do that on the Pro Tour side. Like, they have a booth. They can go back to Nate and Val or whoever's doing the the commentary and have them chop it up for a couple minutes while scorecards are being tallied, and then you do your interview. So I hope to see them change that, just so because at the NT last weekend with Vegas, you know, first thing Calvin Heinberg's doing after the last putt, he's like, where are the scorecards? So like, that's, you know, maybe Eagle is a little less concerned about it because he had a 4-shot lead and he's won a few times, but still, like, the number one thing is they should be able to get the scorecards tallied up. And then, you know, like, our disc golf media, it's moving fast, but I don't think it needs to move that fast. Yeah. Like, we can wait
he can put his mind at ease first before he does an interview about him winning. Right. But one thing I really did like is they did a live listen in. And that's basically when Val and Nate didn't talk while the players were teeing off. So it was kind of like the reaction cam type thing, but they were just listening to
reactions. Listen to what the players were saying.
Yeah, like reactions to shots and what they were saying on the tee. There was one tee, and I think it was the same for the men and women. There was one specific hole where there must have been some super loud bird in a tree nearby, and that bird was like working every player, and you could hear the bird very loudly. And then a couple players that got distracted by it would like react to it and be like, stupid bird, like, shut up, bird. So that was really funny to hear that kind of stuff. So I did like that part of the live coverage.
Yeah. And look, I think with where we're at right now, the live coverage, it still wasn't like full Smashbox standards, but it was passable, and they had good numbers. Like, I will give them credit for that. Like, the FPO numbers on Sunday morning apparently surpassed what the record was, which was last year at Pro Worlds. I'm going to be curious to see how many of that was people watching from Finland, because I think that was probably a pretty significant number. And then I think they had the most non-Pro Worlds viewership on the MPO side, definitely the most at the Memorial. So that kind of viewership is growing. It's just going to be really interesting to see what happens with the post-produced stuff. There's so much disc golf that is consumed in a post-produced fashion, and I don't have a problem with that. I like that. And actually, it's very helpful for us on the NT side, because like we've mentioned, we don't have reliable cell signal at a lot of our tour events. And so we rely on the post-production guys. I almost, like, I know this sounds ridiculous because I'm sure the Pro Tour has invested a significant amount of funds into their post-production. I would almost like to see them just rip off the Band-Aid and go full live. Like, I think at this point, the viewership for that is growing. It would probably save them the headaches of post-production and trying to live up to the standard that Jomez and Central Coast have established, and other teams. I'm not trying, you know. You know, I wonder if they've considered that. I don't, because Steve Dodge's whole thing from the beginning has been live disc golf, watch live disc golf, watch it. And really, if you're giving people the option to watch it in post-production, that doesn't mean they're going to tune in for the live disc golf.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see what they do going forward. I hope none of this has come off as us, like, you know, dragging the tour too much. I think we're just trying to kind of analyze what happened and give some feedback. I really do think that the Pro Tour has a chance to be successful, but they definitely need to show some improvements after this weekend. And I think they would say the same thing. I would hope they would say the same thing. I would hope that high viewership numbers for the live coverage doesn't just let them be super content. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
I hope they listen to the feedback and make some constructive changes.
Yeah, same here. And it's going to be a fun season one way or another, I think, you know, but I do hope that we can get to the point where, like, we're not spending so much time talking about the media stuff. Like, I love the media guys. Love what they do. They bring a ton of value to the sport. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it would be really great if we weren't talking about them. And I think they would probably say the same thing. Like, they don't want to, the media teams don't want to be the focus. They want to deliver a strong product and have that be their focus.
Yeah.
they don't, like, I don't think the Disc Golf Pro Tour wants their media to be the focus. They want the players and the events to be the focus. And right now that's not exactly the case. And so I hope they can right the ship in that department.
Agreed.
Yeah. So we will find out. They've got, not this weekend, but next weekend is the Waco Annual Charity Open. I believe it's next weekend.
Next weekend. Yep.
Okay. I was going to say, I think it usually goes every other. I really like Waco. I'm always excited to see that course. I think, the last couple of years we've had playoffs there. Jeremy Colling's won both times in a playoff. It brings some high drama. It's a good balanced course. I'm pumped for that one. So let's hope they get everything up and running smoothly in time by then.
Yeah.
Sarah, any parting thoughts for today's program?
Well, since we have our fancy schmancy picks points leaderboard going, I thought I would an update on that.
Go for it.
Okay. All right. Here's the update. We both got, so neither of us got any points for the FPO winner. You picked Paige Pierce. I picked Kat. Neither of them won. We got zero. You picked Kale to win. Kale Avisca. He didn't do, he took 12.
Like 12th.
Respectable. Okay. You didn't get any points for that. I took Eagle to win. So I got 2 points for Eagle. Yeah. Neither of us got points for our top five female picks. That was Sarah Hokum and Jennifer Allen.
Dang it.
I know. That was crazy. I thought both of them would have been locked in. Faux show.
I got a top five on the men's side though, right?
So did I. Yeah. Ricky and Paul, who tied for fourth. We each got 1 point for them. Okay. So now we are at a total of 6 for you and 5 for me.
Ooh, it's getting tight. And then I get first pick for Waco, I think, right?
Yep. Yeah, maybe I should make note of that so we don't forget. But yes.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, we will be back next week to talk about all of that. And in the meantime, feel free to hit that subscribe button and share PDJ Radio with your friends. We appreciate all the feedback. You can always hit us up, radio@pdj.com. We've heard a lot of opinions this weekend about the Pro Tour, so send us yours if you've got them. If you think that we're way off base on media stuff, if you have your own take on what should be happening moving forward, let us know. radio@pdj.com. So Sarah, have a great rest of the week.
You too.
Thank you. All right. So until next time, that was Sarah Lamberson. I'm Steve Hill. Thanks for listening to this episode of PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you soon.